Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
George Russell wins the Belgian Grand Prix.
George Russell has been disqualified from this Grand Prix. That is the breaking news which we've received in the last few minutes.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 14th race of the 2024 Formula One season, the Belgian Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by my faithful co-host, Timo Elbus Daly. How are you?
Too bad, thank you, Mr. Billington. A little bit frustrated, quite a bit frustrated with the racing yesterday for reasons we'll get into and that everyone already knows, but on the whole, not too bad. How about yourself?
Not too bad either. Quite warm. It's another very warm day here. But yeah, again, sort of mixed feelings about Sunday's action. I mean, it was a mixed bag in total, really, from the F3 to the F2 to the F1, with races postponed, cut short, and then results changed afterwards. It was all a bit of a jumble.
Fear it may be a second weekend in a row where I make a burn after reading reference to the exact same point of the film. And at this point, you just have to watch it because otherwise it's just going to be really odd.
Yeah, I might have to go and watch that. That's what I can use the summer break for, is go and learn after reading
it. There's no F1 connection whatsoever, but you'll enjoy an interesting film. It's Coen Brothers, so you kind of get what you get.
Yeah. I mean, we say summer break is going to be, I say that like the summer break is going to be uninteresting. We've immediately kicked off the summer break with Silly Season and the news we were all waiting for. And finally,
I was going to say Silly Season, but also news, lots of news in theory. And two-thirds of this news is news that we've known for a while, but no one's just come out and officially said it. It's what we've probably been expecting.
Yeah.
But it's still nice that it's actually happened, at least. We can get on with things now.
It's finally happened. I can stop my silly speculating. And surely this means... I'm never going to stop doing that. Surely it means the rest of the grid is now going to finally start falling into place, because Carlos Sainz is moving to Williams on a multi-year contract as well. And I mean, the whole grid has been waiting for this. I mean, Kevin Magnussen said a couple of great weekends ago, he said, look, the whole grid is waiting to find out what Sainz is doing, see what seats are left. And well, it does mean that Kevin could follow his current teammate to Sauber, which would be funny. Obviously, this means Logan will not be renewed at Williams. It is ever more likely that he'll be heading back stateside to join Prema for their IndyCar campaign. Mm-hmm. And what other seats have we got left open still? I think there is
Alpine,
still...
Audi, potentially two seats. Oh, no, we've got one seat to drive at Hülkenberg. Then we're just left in constant speculation over Red Bull and Minardi, because despite what everyone keeps saying there, I did very much like Daniel Ricciardo's quote coming out to yesterday of, oh, I have a seat in Zandvoort, just don't know which car. Have you been told something by any chance?
I mean, he might have been told something, and he might have been told he's still in the half Italian car, because before we went on air, Red Bull did release a statement before we went on air saying that they would be keeping Perez on for the rest of the season in the Red Bull, which
I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, I think they're doing it to try and appease him a little bit through the summer break so he can relax, rebuild himself, come into the second half of the season.
What the 2-year contract should have done,
With what that should have done. But, I mean, the main focus of this is on Carlos Sainz. Mm. There's no real context for the length of this contract. We know that 2025 and 2026 are confirmed, but no word beyond that.
They said beyond 2026, which probably means that there's an option in the contract to extend it if they're all happy, is it? But it's based on various factors, which is fair enough, because after 2026, we'll get an idea, at least a feel, of who's going to be good and who's maybe going to need a bit more work in the new regulations. But I think it's a good move. I mean, it's I don't want to be mean to Williams because we love Williams, but it is the least worst option from the options available. And it does speak volumes about Audi and Alpine, because obviously they both tried to get in. And you went, no, I'm going to go to Williams. And they've not been having the best season, that's fair to say. But there's clearly more potential for him there. He sees more potential there than he does with Alpine, which I can understand. But then Audi is the really interesting one there, that he kind of echoes, without having to say anything, what I was saying last week, I think, about nothing they've been doing lately has made me go, ooh, this is interesting. This could be quite something. I'm still waiting for that moment where they do a signing or they announce a bit of news that makes me go, ooh, I'm really actually looking forward to Audi coming in. It's not just going to be what it is at the moment.
There's not been anything truly sparkling from them. And I mean, across the weekend, we saw Sainz Sr. and Carlos Honoros, his cousin and his manager, both heading into the Williams motorhome. So this was likely talks with Vowles to sort of finalise and get the contract signed. And Williams has sort of become a bit of a home for broken Red Bull Academy drivers now, with both Albon and Sainz in there. Neither of them have an appendix, though, so this is a good sort of long-term strategy.
It's a weird thing they don't have
strategy
to factor against.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's an added factor you can build into your cars now, a sort of a known weight component. But it does really beg the question.
Well, I don't know
me.
Why Russell didn't use that as the excuse. Oh, didn't I tell you I had appendicitis surgery?
I'd forgotten to balance it out, yeah. Mm. The one thing I will say is, though, it does beg the question, how close might Carlos have been to a Red Bull seat, because he has the consistency, the ability, and has been recently running in a front running team against a very competitive driver. He would be a perfect choice to slot into that second seat next to Max if you did want to replace Checo.
It's one of those frustrating things where that situation with Red Bull is complex enough as it is, because we talked about this with Hülkenberg as well, what fun that would be, sticking him in a seat he's very deserving of just to see what he could do there. But I think the trouble is they're still trying to find a driver to go up with Max that isn't going to challenge him. It's going to be someone who is there when he's not and is able to help him with constructors, but they don't want to rock the Verstappen boat, and Sainz might not be able to do that, but he would try to. And that maybe would have talked him out of something there. Whereas if Ricciardo does go up there at some point, as much as I love him, I don't think that even if he takes him, it's not going to be like it would be the first time that they were together, where it was kind of nip and tuck. It's going to be, he will get some wins, but Verstappen is the dominant force there, whereas Carlos, it's not as clear.
Yeah, I think Carlos would be going there with the aim of trying to win a championship, and I don't think Red Bull want that upset. Whereas, like you said, with Danny Ric, he'll be going there knowing that this is just him securing a seat for a few years, getting a few wins in every now and then, very much similar to what we saw from Bottas in his Mercedes years.
And what we'd expect from Perez in some sense when he came into it. It's kind of, you've had decent cars, you've not had a decent one in a while, have a good one. This is the maximum you're probably going to get out of it, but you're okay with that because you just want to prove that you've still got it, and then you can leave with your head held high.
I mean, if you look at what Bottas was able to do in a similar position when he was at Mercedes, never missed a Q3, pretty much always on the podium when Hamilton wasn't there. He sort of had that spotless record that set an incredibly high bar. And then sort of, I think every team has been looking to try, and everyone always jokes about sort of trying to do like a Project Verstappen. I think the bigger question is which team is successful in doing a Project Bottas, getting a peak condition Bottas that can just always be there next to your championship guy. I'd argue
this season McLaren.
Yeah. When you look at what they've been able to do with Piastri and the consistency he's brought to the team. We'll sort of keep talking a bit about the driver's market then, because of course, just before the weekend started, we had Esteban Ocon announcing he'll be joining Haas in 2025. Bit of a yawn, this one, something again that I had sort of been mentioning for quite some time. And as usual, it was announced just after we'd recorded. Having left Alpine, he'll join the American outfit on a multi-year deal. And it's mad that he's the first Grand Prix winner to race for that team too. Which
is it?
Okay, it's not particularly mad. I mean, they've never been great and never been able to attract the talent, but I think Ocon is an interesting one in what he brings to it. And he's got a level of aggression, determination, consistency, and also experience. You've got to bear in mind that he's been in the sport for, what, 8-9 years now? So he's not exactly a young driver when it comes to this. He joined Formula One incredibly young. So he's got a lot of experience when it comes to different styles of car, developing the cars. He knows the circuits well too. So this isn't sort of the wildest of choice Haas could have made. But equally, with a total height of 3.7 metres of F1 driver, this now eclipses the current Williams pairing at 3.67 metres as the tallest pairing on the grid. RB maintains the shortest at 3.38 metres. The previous Williams lineup of Albon and Latifi was 3.71, but the tallest driver pairing ever was Mark Webber and Justin Wilson for Jaguar at 3.77 metres. Which I think is just a fun fact. The more interesting one, however, is that this is the third time now that Ocon has followed Hülkenberg in driver swaps. 2016, Nico leaves Force India. 2017, Ocon joins Force India. 2019, Hülkenberg leaves Renault. 2020, Ocon joins Renault. 2024, Nico leaves Haas. 2025, Ocon joins Haas. What's he up to? Or is this just a weird quirk of fate?
Yeah. I'm just going to say that's, I don't often believe in coincidence, but this is just probably slightly left off center for coincidence. It's just one of those things where it's a bit of a fun fact, isn't it?
It's a bit of a fun fact.
There's so much to talk about with this Grand Prix that I'm not going to get sidetracked with.
I think it's just the state
of what I was doing in terms of Ricardo, and he's like, oh, I've got to go again. Hulkenberg's off doing something. I've got to go do this now.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised. Even by a consensus, I'll be surprised if that's how he's doing his career.
Yeah, it'd be a strange consciously deciding to do that. Yeah, I think ultimately it speaks for sort of the competitive.
Just has a quick word with him before the season. I'm going to Audi. It's time. Yeah. All right. Cheers, okay. Nico.
I'll go talk to Haas. I think it's also a statement more for the competitiveness of the midfield drivers and the midfield teams as to sort of how often you get those patterns emerge from how closely packed they are, more so than simply Ocon just following in the footsteps of Nico Hülkenberg.
It's one of those frustrating things, though, just with the midfield. Just the last thing I'll say on the drivers before we move on is that a little bit like I was saying with Binotto going to Audi last week, it was. They were obviously trying to board it as this great announcement, and it might be good for them, who knows, but Ocon to Haas, it was just, oh, it's another team that he's going to. He's been around with a few at this point, as have several other drivers in that midfield area. It's just kind of, at what point do you end up back at the team you originally started with and go, ah, this hasn't worked? And it's just frustrating from kind of a semi-neutral perspective, because you want the best drivers in there, and we're frustrated that we haven't had any F2 champions really coming in consistently since that influx with Charles and everyone else. It's been a bit of slim pickings on that front. It's just frustrating that we see the same few going into these spots and like doing Vesti, other drivers are here that like whoever wins F2 this year, like if it's Hadjar, good luck. There's already six drivers competing for that seat as it is. You're not going to get in there now, and it's just frustrating that we don't have these other outlets for the driver. And yet Ocon, like you say, nothing against him personally, but as a driver, we base you off, what was it, they always say you were only as good as your last race.
Mm.
He's not had a good race for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Yeah, I know, but it's sort of, and I know if someone's always got to finish P9 and all the rest of it, but it's just, there's not as much of an excitement with this, I feel like, with the driver announcements this year, because there's no one new coming. There's no one where I'm like, oh my God, Stoffel Van Dorn's coming back in. You know, it's kind of like that would be left twisty kind of thing, but not even to Maserati. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah. But
although you say about
sort an exciting bit of news, yeah.
You say about moving teams and eventually going back to where you started. Obviously, Ocon can't do that. Manor Racing doesn't exist, which is actually just a reference to the pre-record chatter that we enjoyed. But speaking of Alpine and moving and people, Bruno Fama has left Alpine.
Exciting.
They love doing this at Spa. Otmar and Piastri announced departures at Spa. The latter had its anniversary on the same day as Fama was announced to be leaving. He's only been in the role since this race last year as well. So the big question is, does this restart their 100-day mission to get good again at F1? This is at least their
first. How long has this been going on since, what, 2021, this one?
It's been going on since they were
hard. It's hard to track. Case in point, then, yeah, it's been going on a while.
It must have been going on
for 100 Grand Prix.
Yeah, this was an idea that Zaffnauer started, and we're several team principals down that line now. Like, it's a bit of a joke now, and
don't put Flav in charge.
You know that's
you can. You know that you know that's what they're going to do, but you're just like, please don't. It's like when you see the plot twist coming in the film, and it's one of these really annoying ones. You're like, oh, don't, oh, no, ah, oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a sort of plot twist in the film where they've not shown you any of the details that lead up to it. So you're like, okay, well, how was I supposed to figure that out? I get no enjoyment from this. Thank you very much. And I don't know. Flav returns. We see, oh, he's going to favour Gasly. So it's going to be Ocon forced to crash at Baku to give Gasly a podium or something ridiculous.
Drivers don't need much incentive to crash at Baku. The track does it for them. Push this time.
Yeah, it's Baku. Anyway, that's most of the news out of the way. So we'll jump into the actual Grand Prix itself, which was, of course, the sixth race where the pole sitter has now failed to win. And also, this is no Max wins in four races now. The last gap relative to this for Max wins was 2020, which was Abu Dhabi back to the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, 11 races between those two. He's only been on the podium once in the past four races, finishing fifth on those occasions when he's not been on the rostrum. This is boiling out to be quite an interesting season because of just how competitive that front pack has become.
It's the one frustrating element of that is that as fun as all that is, he's extended his championship lead somehow. And I mean, it makes sense because he's just adding points. And with all the other drivers that are possible contenders for P2, they're all taking points off.
Help keep our community safe and healthy during National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, October 25th. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent drug misuse before it starts.
Each other, but they're crucially not taking points off first. And it's kind of this case of, this is never going to happen, but they should all be working together to try and take him out in the championship, not in a race. But they're obviously not going to do that because you need this unholy alliance between Ferrari, McLaren and Mercedes, with maybe Alonso kind of coming in to cause a bit of chaos because he could make or break some of the races if he wanted to by just being Alonso. But you know it's not going to happen, so it's all of them kind of, it's not necessarily Max winning the championship, it's all of them losing it together because they're unable to get close to him. They'll get close, but they'll run out of races.
Yeah, it's...
But it's exciting to see because you've got this jeopardy of, if you can all just, you're not going to work together, but if you can just manage to do it a little bit, you could at least make things interesting and we might just get, you'll get the constructors, but I don't know. The World Championship seems out of it.
This harks back to, again, something we were chatting about in the sort of pre-record, which was in Formula 3, if you watch that, Leonardo Fornaroli has not won a race since 2021 and he's now on the cusp of becoming this year's F3 champion. And this is testament to the idea of consistency is key, and Max has pretty much proven that to this point of banked a load of points with his big wins. And this weekend, by 2 points, he's outscored Norris. But that's all he needs to keep doing, is just to keep outscoring the guy that's in second place in the championship. Just to keep your gap there and just keep pushing it, even a little bit. And somehow, Fornaroli's done that consistently to Gabriele Mini in F3. We're seeing Verstappen somehow doing that in F1. But in F1, we might have the chance for that to swing the other way. F3's only got one more round. We'll find out what happens in Monza. But in F1, we've got another, 10 races still to go? So races, we're going to see...
Plus a couple of sprint races. So, I mean, it's one of the, it's mathematically possible. But, like I say, it requires teamwork that's not going to happen because it's people outside of their own teams.
Yes, yeah, it's relying on...
It's almost... You could maybe see Mercedes helping McLaren because of the... But even then, it's tenuous at best because you still need to rely on McLaren to do... It's kind of... Mercedes they've both got the drivers, but Mercedes have the team to do it smartly. Whereas you could lay it all out with McLaren at the moment, they can still probably find a way to bungle it at the last moment. And then Ferrari gets in there and you're like, it's great for you, but also goes against what we're trying to do here. We're trying to stop Max. Like, oh, that's not my interest. I'm just trying to get points, man.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting way this could all pan out, or you could see drivers sort of coalescing to work together to do things similar to how we saw Sainz and Norris do the Singapore Grand Prix last year, where it was sort of Sainz knowing he could tow Norris behind him as sort of like a buffer zone. There's something that's going
to
happen.
To lead it back into this Grand Prix, this is exactly what it reminded me of, this entire Grand Prix. Spa was the sequel to Singapore last year, where everyone is very, very close for the majority of the race, and it just requires one of you to mess up. And no one did, really.
No.
So it was good in that respect. It was kind of, oh, I've seen this before, but it's better somehow because you've got 10 cars, pretty much, or everyone down to Alonso at least, within 20 seconds of one another. And you're like, oh, this is you don't need, it's quite, you, it's weird. You didn't want there to be a safety car. You didn't want there to be a yellow flag because it would ruin the tension. It would be like, you were all pushing each other so much onto the edges here that one of you messes up in a little bit. It doesn't have to be a crash. You just, one of you goes slightly wide. And we saw that with Lewis at the end, Piastri getting so close to him that you're like, ooh, that could be quite dramatic in a second, but in a sense of minimal action, which is weirdly really nice to watch because you think, oh, it's got to be action packed. There's got to be lots of empty and there's got to be crashes. No, it's just got to be really close racing.
It's a they race can that get works past off each other, natural tension.
But it's, that's not the key component here, yeah.
Yeah. So with the sort of the overview of the Grand Prix out of the way then, Timo, we'll jump into the teams as we usually do to pick this apart. And Red Bull.
I'll let you go first.
Okay, I'll go first then. Okay. I'll jump in then with Red
Bull. You're talking about the race itself. I'm trying to deal with afterwards.
Yeah. Perez from P2 to P8 isn't really what he needed, nor the team against McLaren. Max, however, did well to overcome his grid drop, but in the mixed air of the field, clearly the Red Bull is not necessarily suffering, but clearly sort of showing that the other teams have developed up to it a bit, and there are some shortcomings now, and the other cars have more pronounced advantages. Going into part two of the season, this will be interesting to see them fight and defend their title, because I think certainly for the constructors, they are now on the foot where it's become defensive. And a lack of preserved tyres seemed to be the issue for Max. He didn't have the new tyre options that some of the other drivers in the field did. So he was doing well to work with the strategy he was given, a lot less moany about it than he was in Hungary. But an interesting one. And then obviously, like I said before we came on air, Red Bull affirmed Sergio for his seat for the rest of the season. So obviously Red Bull knows coming out the weekend, they did not look like the shining bright star they ought to have been. And interesting.
Yeah. On the one hand, I can understand why they still want to back Perez. We know the driver that he can be. He just hasn't been this year at all. Not since the first kind of two races of the season. And it's like you said, he's not forgotten how to drive, but something's gone wrong. And it can't just be the car, because Verstappen was able to carve it up through the field. Okay, he didn't get as far as we thought, which was quite nice for a change. Perez starting in P2 and finishing in P8, like you say, it's just not what he needed, and he's going to cost them the Constructors' Championship if he keeps going like this. I'd like him to be up in the fight. We've got a nice fight going at the front, and it'd be fun to have Perez in there, because again, he's a driver where when he's on it, he's on it. You look at some of his defensive drives from throughout 2021, for example. You look at him in street circuits in 2022. He's good, but we've just not seen it lately, and it's really frustrating. And begs the question again of what should Red Bull do? We know what they're going to do now, or what they've said they'll do at least for the next 5 minutes, but it's a curious thing, because we've seen how brutal Red Bull have been with drivers in the past, regardless of who you are, to an extent.
Yeah.
If you're not Vettel or Verstappen, you're fair game, is pretty much how that can be interpreted as. It's not always been the case where they'll do it, but it's been more of an option than it would have been, you'd be comfortable with it being if you were with any other team as well. And so I think for the sake of the team and for the sake of clearing some space for the future, because this helps on that front, Perez, he's had a good career on the whole. He's done better than we thought he would do at points because of Red Bull giving him the chance. But kind of maybe time to go. Stick and even if that's at the end of the season, this works both ways, because if you keep him to the end of the season, you stick Ricciardo in that car, he gets that opportunity, as I've said before. He, the first to admit, if he's not still got it, he'll leave, and he just wants to see if he's lost his mojo or if he's capable of at least fighting for wins and podiums again, which is fair enough. You know, I think if you're that kind of driver, that's at least that you're not owed anything, but it's the most you can ask for is a chance. And that's what he's getting, and that would be the fulfillment of that. And you're not making anyone else behind him in the queue wait that long either, because maximum a year. You know, if he does really well, fair enough, you know, you've got good stuff. And maybe he decides he wants to leave on a high. We don't know, he could do a Rosberg. Not necessarily with the championship, but he leaves on a high. Yuki and everyone else behind him, they're still very young. So you keep him in the Minardi for another year in 25. You stick Liam Lawson in with him because he deserves a seat in F1. We need to at least see if he's still got what we know he has. You then have Ajar if he wins the title, or if he's in the top three of the title. I feel like that's fair enough as a test and reserve driver for Minardi. and you stick him in Super Formula, you stick Iwasa in for another season of Super Formula, and you get him to be the reserve driver for Red Bull. You get them both in FP1 sessions. And then as soon as Ricciardo's out the door, you've got two drivers at AlphaTauri where you know immediately which one you want to put in up to next to Max. Neither one's going to beat him, so we're all good there as well. And whoever impresses most of the time sheets from Iwasa and Hadjar, you stick them in the Minardi. And by that point, Lindblad's probably come along. He's probably still in F2. You can have him as a reserve driver and kind of Nolly Bearman type role, so that should one of them get appendicitis, he can have a go in whichever car. And by that point, any other Red Bull juniors that they've got that are worthy of these kind of teams, you've got Kramnitz and a few others, you actually get more of an idea of what they're capable of rather than just being names on the list. Mm-hmm. But it all comes down to Perez at the end of it. And I like that they've affirmed him for the time being, because that, again, they're trying to give him every opportunity. It's like what Williams did with Logan at the end of last year. Like, we're not going to make any decisions until after the season's done. We don't want to put any added pressure on him, because clearly there is something going on with Perez upstairs. There's something not there. And he needs that. He needs to feel like the team's there. And I feel like if they still give him a chance, how long into the Martin original season do they give him before potentially they go, off you go? And if he does well, fair enough. Then maybe we see out the rest of his 2 years. But again, it's this thing of, could come back for 5 minutes. What if he drops off again at the start of next season? How long do you wait then? Next year could be the really costly year for it. It's already at risk now. It's going to be even riskier next year. Mm. So they've got a lot of thinking to do. And I've presented a very eloquent solution, if I do say so myself, but also it's probably not that easy for them to do, because they're just too, they've got too much emotion invested in it.
I also think it really depends on where Red Bull finishes in the Constructors' Championship. Because if they do really
and at what
well,
point, if they get rid of Perez before, and whilst it's still possible, will they be ruining that they didn't get rid of him sooner if they still don't manage to do it with whoever replaced him, despite the replacement doing what they want them to do?
Yeah, and also it's the double-edged sword of, if they don't do well, do they blame it on Perez and swap him? Or do they say, oh, well, that's the best we can do, no one else could have done better, we'll keep Perez? Or if they don't do well, or if they do well, do they still bin off Perez and go, right, time for someone fresh anyway? It's sort of, there's so many different factors based on if they do well, if they don't do well, what their threshold is for doing well. I'd argue their threshold is going to be a win. It might not even have like a points gap to the next guy.
At this point, it's a podium.
Yeah. No, but for a championship, it might just be a win. For a championship, for them, it might just be, if they can win it, sure, then Perez has sort of proven he's done just enough to keep the team afloat. If they haven't, then it's a completely sort of blown open matter. I think a huge amount of this will depend on where they finish in the Constructors, because that's where the big money is. That's where the money is that will sign Perez for another few years. It's where the money is that will sign Ricciardo for another few years, or Iwasa, or Lawson, or...
And this is the thing. I know I'm naive whenever I say this, but it's what I still think F1 need to go back to, is this idea of, you're meant to be the 20 best drivers in the world. As soon as one of you isn't up to scratch anymore, go. You know, we're meant to be promoting the next generation to come up. They're having enough trouble as it is. And I'm not saying you're a bad driver, Perez. You're not. But can you say firmly that you're one of the best 20 in the world?
Would you say that currently we have a sport that is maybe the 16 best drivers and 4 marketing tools in the sport? I would say that's a fair statement to make. I'll leave you to decide which 4 I'm referring to.
I would have potentially chosen different numbers, but we can discuss that later.
But you can see
Oh, yes. No, I know exactly what you're thinking, and I know which drivers that are definitely on both of our lists.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another thing. But happily, Ferrari did better.
Yeah.
Not terribly. And the fun fact I saw about them was that with the points scored this weekend, Ferrari have done such a Ferrari thing of now accumulating over 10,000 points in their F1 history. Both drivers maximised the results, I think, that they could get this weekend. And it's an outside shot, but I still think they're in the hunt for the Constructors' Championship. If they can if they can just keep chipping away, McLaren and Red Bull just keep kind of taking bits out of each other, instead Ferrari could just sneak in at the end and go, I'll have that, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, they've done 10,000 points accrued. They've raced in 1,087 starts. So I think that's over sort of it's about the sort of 10 points a race per as a team sort of thing, which isn't bad considering a lot of that is also on the old point scoring system as well, where you used to have to scratch races and stuff. So that's really not bad at all, which speaks for their competence across the genera, really. And I think I'll echo you, considering their lows this season, this weekend was not bad. It was pretty competent, though not hugely competitive as a strategy, but it did the job. And a solid weekend around, all around, and rebalances what they're doing and puts them on a good foot going into the summer. It was a high-deg circuit, it was hot, it was intense. This is usually where we see Ferrari struggle, and they didn't this weekend. They were on it. They made the sensible calls. I think that at one point we were hoping Carlos Sainz might do a one-stopper, but I think ultimately they knew that that car could not prolong its tyres to do a one-stop strategy.
And importantly, they knew that. They didn't go, oh, yeah, let's try it, because we've seen that at Spa before with Ferrari and Leclerc, and you've gone, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Why have you done that? Whereas
it
this
just
time,
shows before and after.
Yeah,
it's
there's
nice.
Been learning, there's been application of historic data, there's been putting together what they know about this car, this driver, this circuit, their data from Thursday and Friday, and going, okay, we would love to do a one-stop strategy and see where it puts us up there with your Russell, your Piastri, your Hamilton. It would have been interesting, but we would have also likely crashed out the race and scored no points at all, which sucks for both Ferrari and Sainz. Let's be sensible. And that's a Ferrari we haven't seen since the Jean Todt days, which is interesting.
Let's talk.
Help keep our community safe and healthy during National Prescription Drug Take Back Day, October 25th. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent drug misuse before it starts.
Get ahead of us. Oh,
I don't, yeah, I won't.
I don't want to hope
far,
too soon.
But it's a nice warm
hurt before.
Feeling. I don't know if it's a nice warm feeling or if it's indigestion because I've not long had dinner. But either way, it's setting me up nicely for the summer break to go, maybe Ferrari are going to be okay. Maybe.
Talking of setting things up nicely for the summer break, if you're Lewis Hamilton, you, regardless of what happened afterwards, you've got to be pretty happy going into the summer break because, like I said, when he won at Silverstone, he never really left, but he's well and truly back, I think. And that was evident from the get-go. Nothing was stopping him getting past Perez and Leclerc at the beginning of the Grand Prix. Like they could have done that a million times and he would have got past every single time. It was not going to happen. He won't have wanted to win like this, and it's really frustrating. Especially as now we've got two Grand Prix weekends in a row where the wins are more frustrating than they should be. That's, I guess, how it is sometimes, although please stop doing that because it's ruining my enjoyment of some otherwise decent races. It was an inspired strategy from Russell Mercedes, though, and it's why it makes it such a shame. It goes back to this whole thing of why can you not just punish the team and not the driver for something the driver has no real control over? Just take the constructors' points away from Mercedes, leave George with it. And it's really annoying because you almost now wish that Hamilton had been able to get past him because, disqualify for P2 is still annoying, but at least it's not the win. It's somehow just so much worse. And it's the same thing, like it's not even getting a five second penalty for something a bit iffy, like Vettel in Canada, or because you did track limits or you drove into someone. It's just, there's a time, I think this is the only track where we don't do a cool down lap after the Grand Prix, and that's what calls you out on it. It just, because like you say, that was one of the arguments they used, was that they didn't get enough pickup, which would have added on to the overall weight for it. And it just wouldn't surprise me if Russell's ultimate disqualification is going to deter others from being a bit bold like that in the future, because they risk this sort of nonsense from happening to them. And ultimately, for me, it ruined a large part of one of the best Grand Prix we've had in recent years, definitely at Spa. We've not had a race in Spa that good in years.
2019, easily.
Yeah. And kind of robs Hamilton a little bit of it because he really wanted that win. He really deserved that win, but it takes it away a little bit. And I was saying this to someone that, how have his last two wins both been my possible favourite and least favourite? I don't get it. I get it, but I don't. And ultimately, Leclerc is robbed of a proper podium too, which is always a bit naff. I'm sure at least he's got something else he can have in common with Carlos now, but it's frustrating because it was a really good race on track and just reminds me of COTA last year, where you have this excellent fight going for the podium places. And then a few hours later, oh no, actually, the track's a bit abrasive and it's taken the floor off your car a bit too much. So I'm just going to blame you for that instead of looking at the circuit and thinking that seems a bit harsh.
It's an interesting one. I think between the two of us, we've actually put together an entire A4 page of notes on Mercedes.
It's because it was, I think this thing, like, if it wasn't a good Grand Prix, we probably wouldn't be moaning as much about it. But I still think that regardless of whoever won the race, we'd be miffed because it was just
Grand Prix ruined.
It was a close battle for so long, and then someone else decides it.
Yeah. I think I've got to side with you. It's an incredible drive from both drivers, really. And George's ability to pull off that one stop, though, and still have the grip in the hards for the braking zones, for the release from the slow corners, was immense. A huge amount of energy recovery going into the braking zones really helped slow him down. And then also, again, gave him that sort of power that he could meter in through corner exits. Both Mercedes ran really well this weekend. And again, it's inspiring seeing the teams sort of turn around, rebuild, bringing different upgrades of different weekends. They understand this car now. They can bring along these sort of specific setups for circuits again and sort of go, we know it's going to do this if we do this. We know it's going to do this if it does this. The same as Red Bull have been doing, but Mercedes are seeing the results from it. And yeah, Lewis had a solid drive, but George Russell, what a drive, I have to say. Lewis's pit strategy could have been bolder, pushing a little more each time out. He did complain afterwards they were leaving a lot of grip on the tyres still.
This was the thing for me. I immediately thought when the race was finished, and it was still good at that point, that this is exactly what McLaren should have done last week. There was no reason to risk anything unnecessarily. They were told to race, they were told to be careful, and they were. And like Hamilton, it was kind of a bit like Brazil when they got the last one too. It was kind of, I'll chase him down, but if I can't get him, I'm not going to do anything stupid about it. And I'm not going to get Russell to slow down deliberately for me to go past or vice versa. That was, for me, a clear-cut compare and contrast between team that's won championships and team that wants to win championships.
Yeah, and Mercedes and Lewis certainly has that team mentality of knowing that it's not worth absolutely cannonballing one down the inside of Russell on dead tyres, because the team gains nothing from that. The team loses everything from that.
Whereas so you're still going to want to either way. Yeah,
you get on the podium, you both of you look like gods for your strategies, bingo. And yeah, I think Lewis's strategy could have been bolder, but either way, it's a 1-2, it's solid for their points haul and keeps the fight at the top busy. Then for all of that to be for now after the weight penalties, genuinely left saddened and confused, and some reports suggest that the FIA took more than the required fuel amount for testing. About 2.8 litres were taken from the car. The standard sample is 1 litre. Assuming that petrol has roughly the same density as water, that's an extra 1.8 kilos that's just been whipped from the car. And they've gone, oh yeah, you're underweight now. You're sort of going, how much am I underweight by? 1.5 at least. And you're going, could I have my petrol back? And they're going, no, we need that. For what? Testing reasons, I guess, maybe. And like you said, there's limited chance post-race to pick up marbles, which on tyres worn down to the canvas. There are pictures out there of George's tyres. You can see the canvas and the banding underneath them. Like, there was nothing left on them. Of course they weighed the square root of sod all. There was basically no tyre there apart from the air inside them.
I need to go for another 4 mile drive just to pick up some stuff. That's going to help me out a lot.
Yeah, got to go do 7 kilometres picking up bits of sticky rubber. So it just feels there's so many uneasy factors that go into this. And I'm not sure which arguments Mercedes made. I know the scales are recalibrated. I know their sporting director was there to oversee everything and make sure it was done properly. And I don't doubt that Mercedes fought this tooth and nail. But I just don't get why the FIA weighed the car when it came in from the race and went, yeah, no, you're good. We know, the FIA know what petrol weighs. They can take out the petrol needed and go, yeah, no, that's, we know exactly what that weight is and it's fine. But instead they then weigh it again and go, oh, it weighs too little now. You're sort of going, what? Hang on. And it's just strange that one weight is acceptable, one isn't. It's about as clear as soup. It does, however, make Russell the first disqualified driver in about 30 years, though.
Something tells me he won't be happy with that, though. And that's not something you should write on a postcard to him.
James Hunt, 1976 British Grand Prix, failed to complete
that was silly as well.
After the race was red flagged, Lauda wins the race.
There's a reason it's not happened in 30 years, by the way. It took us that long to get over the last one, being stupid.
Well, it took us that long to get over 76 in the British Grand Prix. Piquet, 1982, Brazilian Grand Prix, car under the minimum weight. This was the old water tank for cooling the brakes trick. Prost wins. Prost, 1985, San Marino Grand Prix, under the minimum weight, failed to account for tyre wear and fluid usage. Elio De Angelis wins his second and last win as an F1 driver. Then Senna, 1989, Japanese Grand Prix, rejoining the track illegally with a push start from the marshals. This is after he collided with Prost at the top of the circuit. Alessandro Nannini wins his only ever win. And then Schumacher, 1994.
That's even worse.
Yeah. Schumacher, 1994, Belgian Grand Prix, illegal skid block where Hill takes the win. So, like, some of those make sense. Some of those are just as sort of goopy as
dubious.
Yeah, Mercedes, as the recent one. So it's there's a history of this thing happening, annoyingly. And
but again, it wouldn't be so bad years, if it hadn't
been such a good race. I'm with you on this.
Well, this is the thing, you know, it's I was thinking about this. If it was a driver that I wasn't particularly fond of, and obviously I thought if Stroll had won, would I be making so much of a fuss? But if it was him somehow in that Aston Martin out front, and he's keeping Hamilton and Piastri at bay. God knows what a Grand Prix we've had up to that point already for us to be in this situation. But also, I would still be a little bit pissed because I'm there thinking, you know what? He doesn't often show up, but when he does, it's kind of good. And he may have peaked here if he's managed to do this. And then for that to be taken away from someone, even I would feel sorry for Lance Stroll. And that is bold. So I think it's just whoever would have been in that car, I would have been feeling sorry for that and miffed. So, but on the other hand, McLaren, positive on the whole. Fantastic. We keep saying this about the driver so far. Fantastic drive and strategy by Piastri and his side of the garage, basically. I just love the fact that Hamilton was worried about, he wasn't worried about Russell, Leclerc, Verstappen or Norris, but he was about Piastri. Kind of, oh, you worried about the champion behind you or the guys trying to fight for a championship and your teammate? No. That young kid from down under who's in his second season, that guy, he terrifies me.
Yeah, the guy who spent a year on Renault's pit wall just sort of grinning gorgeously. Yeah,
watching you.
Yeah, he's the one I'm worried about.
Yeah, I love that. And he got so close at the end. I mean, Piastri, you could tell he wanted that win. I mean, he's not a very emotional guy, as we've seen, but you can tell it got to him a little bit. And I love that about him. And Norris, it's interesting. We say this a lot, but he did solidly, but I think he should have maybe pushed more. Verstappen starts out of position. Norris starts ahead of him. He should have stayed ahead of him. He's got the fastest car. He's got the better car, definitely at Spa, as we saw. So even if it's only by one place, he should have finished ahead of him. But instead, Verstappen extends his championship lead and Piastri just does an absolute number on him. And after the race, the point you're maybe going to echo in a second, is that he was saying about he lost it at the start. I'm like, oh, so those other 44 laps, just not gonna bother with those at all. Not gonna try anything. Particularly, like, you did fine, but again, this is why you're not winning more races. This is why you're not championship material just yet. You're thinking you've lost it into turn one, and then you don't bother trying for the next 43 and a half laps. And okay, maybe he is, and it's just the way he's phrasing it. In which case, get a better media person to help you phrase things. But it just comes across as you're not going to win or lose a race into turn one. Well, you can definitely lose it, but, you know, you're not going to win it there either. So keep trying. It's not over till it's over. And you saw that from Hamilton. You saw that from Piastri. You saw that from Albon and Ricciardo at points. They seem to be just awakened in a way that they hadn't been both respectively for a while for the lower end of the points positions. And you're like, oh, this is nice. And then you look at Norris and go, come on. Like, everyone else is doing it. You can do it too. Like, we know you can. You've done it before at points. It's not worked, but you tried. We just want you to try. Yeah. And that's what frustrates me and why I'm so much more in the Piastri camp if I have to choose a side.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to, say, four races. So if you look back at the last four races, Austria, Britain, Hungary, Spa.
Mm.
Piastri has outscored Norris at all of them bar British Grand Prix.
Mm.
Like, Norris's biggest sort of title rival could soon become his own teammate. If,
well, this is the thing. Piastri keeps up this pattern. It's going to be quite amusing if he gets past him and the team going, like, oh, this is awkward. You thought Hungary was awkward.
Yeah. guess who's now getting all the favoured strategies?
Norris, you're really going to have to slow down now. You can't be doing this. We've got to prioritise him for the championship. You what, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo what you said. Piastri really proving he's not a flash in the pan.
Far too much today.
Yeah, and I'd love to see what he could have done on a one-stop like Russell's. His pace in the final laps was exceptional, and he did well to catch Lewis. I think Piastri's tyre management has come a long way since his early days in F1 too. So
this would have been last year.
Yeah, literally, he's still 65 days ago. It's still quite early, but even then, his time management has developed a lot, which was his Achilles heel for quite some time. If he was able to make a one stop last, that would have been fascinating. If his pace in the final laps was exceptional, and he did well to catch and then put pressure on 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton, like, to be doing that in just your second season of Formula One, phenomenal.
Kind of like Lewis is seeing him going, I remember when I was you.
This was literally me, like, sort of a decade and a bit ago. Like, looking at it going, hey, I used to be the hotshot in the McLaren challenging him when I was a kid.
And I've seen this one before.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe Piastri needed another 2 or 3 laps to get past Lewis.
It strengthens my argument from Imola that if it had been him in P2 chasing Verstappen, he would have got him.
Yeah, he would have just sent it. He would have made a lunge on the brakes and with enough electricity to just drive him out of the corner. It would have been good. With Norris, it's another start. He's balked. This time wide without contact or pressure in turn one. It was such a strange mistake to make. And then dropping places throughout the rest of the race, it was just left me a bit lackluster. Especially when you're comparing him, you're having to compare him now to Piastri. He's his closest rival. He's the guy with the same machinery under him. It's the equal machinery joke, but past four races,
you've got to think
outscored.
With everything that happened between Ricciardo and McLaren, he's got to be looking at Piastri going, yeah.
Yeah. It's such a strange one. And I mean, it's a mixed bag, which isn't really what can be said about Aston Martin. It's just sort of a bag of bland.
Yeah, it's an odd one because, I mean, Lonzo doing, once again, the best he can with what he's got. Gets P9, gets points, decent, and it's kind of mad that they're both in the top 10 in the championship, but the gulf between Alonso and Stroll is still very sizable, and seeing the race performance that Alonso's had with that car, you wonder how he's managed to get that many points to begin with, because okay, yeah, we're 14 races down and we got 10 to go, but you're still thinking, when did he manage to get all of these? I mean, I've watched all of them. I've seen how he's gotten all of these, but you're still like, but where did he get them all from? Whereas Stroll, yeah, was Stroll, you know? I mean, at least I didn't put them in my fantasy team.
I
had Alonso, but that works out nicely.
Yeah, I swapped Alonso in for possibly Gasly. So I swapped out Alpine.
Oh, that is an improvement.
Rough weekend. So, I mean, at least they did sort of score points in it. But like you said,
at least you didn't swap out Gasly for Stroll.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at it graphically and you look at like Russell.
I'd rather just watch it normally.
Graphically is very interesting, I can assure you. Russell, 116 points. Then you look at the huge gap to Alonso, 49. He's the next driver in the championship, and it's such a gulf between them. Then it's a gap again to Stroll on 24. Alonso has basically scored 3.5 points at every race this season so far, or every race weekend. Stroll, 24.
Again, he's kind of doing the midfield version of Max.
Yeah, just real consistency.
Like he's winning that championship by a country mile, but we don't know quite how.
Yeah, Stroll, meanwhile, scoring the very unpretty 1.714-28571 points per race weekend. But, I mean, yeah, they're both just out there putting in points. But, I mean, Stroll's closest rival is Tsunoda at the moment, which isn't exactly a great thing.
You can say Stroll's close competitor is Stroll. Probably is as well.
Sometimes it depends quite how optimistic he was when he woke up in the morning. I don't know. I mean, Hülkenberg is also around there at the moment as well. Hülkenberg, I believe, is tied for Tsunoda on 22 points. So
it would not surprise me if Hulk could jump both of those by the end of the season with how they've both been doing lately and how Hulk's just kind of, okay, Hulk's not scored points in a little bit, but out of the three of them, he's weirdly looking like the strongest. And I don't quite know how we got there, but I'm intrigued. Yeah.
It's a curious one, especially considering he's driving a Haas and historic notes on Haas. But, I mean, yeah, wasted some moves in my fantasy team. But, I mean, they didn't have straight line pace. I don't know if it's something inherent to the car, something inherent to the setup. But, yeah, remind me to not use them. Come Monza, Baku, Austin,
I'm
Mexico, Qatar,
or Vegas. You do whatever you want.
Yeah, a great job to rebuild Lance's car for quali after a big shunt. But maybe someone else should be in it next year, really. A Paul Aron, maybe. A really good driver who could do with an F1 seat.
Yeah. Or Drugovich.
He's been
there for long enough. At
the moment, I've lost track of what they've done with Drugovich.
No,
or they just shut him in a cupboard?
That's Van Dorn.
Ah, yes.
Drugovich, I don't know where he is these days.
Trapped in a basement somewhere at their headquarters, waiting, praying. Moving then from Aston Martin to Minardi, Toro Rosso, RB, Visa Cash App.
I almost feel sorry for you. I don't, but I almost.
Me or the team?
You. You look at how Yuki started the season, and you look at where he is now, and you go, you're doing so well. This can't all be the car. It can't just be circuits. It's happening a bit too consistently now. And yeah, okay, he started at the back, but then why not try something, anything? This was the kind of that you've got nothing to lose scenario. You don't get that very often, so you might as well try it and get whatever data you can from random scenarios that you wouldn't otherwise do because you're trying to drive a normal race. And so for them to just not really try anything, it was frustrating. And they hit, like I say, they've got everything to gain and nothing to lose from the back of the grid, and nothing came of it. Ricciardo, by comparison, looked very solid all race. It was kind of one of his better drives, it feels like, from a visual point of view. We got a lot, maybe it's just because we got to see him more on the TV and we'd have to go looking for stuff. And it kind of showed that he was driving the maximum from what the car he's been given at, because this also wasn't a strong track for them in some respect, but he managed to drive it. It felt more like an Alonso or a Button in a McLaren Honda. It's kind of, I don't know how I'm here either, but I'm trying to get it up there. It was unfortunate that Ocon managed to sneak past him at the end. Not quite sure how he did that. Probably safer to just let him pass, though, and not get damaged, because we know what Ocon's like. And the one saving grace from the Russell DSQ is that we do get a championship point for Ricciardo out of it. So it kind of works. Frustrating, that's how we have to get it. But point to point at the end of the day, and I need some kind of good news to come out of the Russell business, so I will take it where I can. But yeah, it's interesting there at the moment, because things are maybe, I don't know if they're leveling out, but it's not as clear cut as it was for like the first five or six races of the year now.
Yeah, I think, again, I'm going to possibly agree with you on some of those points, and some of them I will be a bit counter to you on, but
is
I will.
Is it any chance?
Is, yes. I think it's better, but the problem is the midfield scrap is getting too tight now. So there's a lot to prove in a very busy pack. And while, yeah, you're right, it was a decent drive from Yuki, and there was very little you could do from that far back. With a conservative strategy, had you, like you said, given them something just a bit more out there, a bit more avant-garde just to play with, there could have been something interesting to have gained from that. And equally, in a field where you're tying on points, every P11, P12, P13 finish counts on countback, and that's going to start mattering. It was all right from Danny Ric, but when Ocon comes past you on the brakes and you're the last of the late breakers, clearly neither driver fully trusts the car. I'm not saying that this is just...
I also think he's getting China Stroll flashbacks. It's like, no, I'm not risking this again.
A little bit, but at the same time, I think this is purely because he doesn't trust the car. The car isn't underneath those drivers at the moment.
Well, that's been something they've had all year, though, with that, is kind of, which we keep trying to learn. Like, you keep trying to learn by the time you get it for Abu Dhabi, and that's it, maybe.
Yeah, but they still...
They're learning for both of them.
Aren't quite getting to grips with it. I don't think this was a case of simply trying to avoid Ocon, just letting him breeze past. I think this was generally a case of they don't like car they're racing. And you look, we'll get onto this a bit more when we get to Alpine, but I think Ocon had a really good weekend, actually. He was making some stonking overtakes and some brilliant moves around the outside, up the inside, on the brakes. He was sort of metering out his speed in places that was really quite impressive. But we'll get to that. We'll move to Williams first. And
a little disappointing.
Yeah.
But I think that's just because we care so much, you know? It's... Albon looked speedy, like I alluded to earlier. There was some kind of an attitude that he had during the Grand Prix that made me think he has awakened again. And it was disappointing that he didn't come away with at least one point. But, you know, Sainz is going there. Albon's there. I'm now firmly on Ellie May's hype train of wanting Adrian Newey there, because wouldn't that just be fantastic? And like I say, I think it's just because we care so much about Williams. It's just, it's a heritage team. It's a classic staple of Formula One. It wouldn't be Formula One without Williams. So in the same way that we're always annoyed when Ferrari does what Ferrari does, we're the same with Williams, because we know what they're capable of, but they just haven't been able to get there. So they'll be back, but they'll still know when.
Yeah, I mean, I think much like you, I was a little bit disappointed. They needed a little less wing and a bit more speed, certainly for Albon to make the most of a high-speed circuit. And the floor is clearly still underdeveloped. If they can't back off the wing to get the speed needed without sacrificing the tyres, and they can't just sort of rely on the floor to generate that downforce. So the car is a long way off what's needed by the drivers, and hopefully bringing Sainz in next season will help with the dev work. I think I wrote that before they'd announced Sainz. I think I wrote that in prior to that as sort of like
That's
a
how much of
joke
a
sort of
slam dunk
question.
it is.
Yeah, I wrote that in as sort of like a maybe bringing Sainz in next season will help with the dev work. And then sure enough, they go and sign him, and I'm like, oh, look at that. My prediction came true. Speaking of cars that need dev work or maybe strategic development work, Stake.
Work. It's getting tougher to find a silver lining for them. I was going to write, I like their livery still, but I feel like I can't say that. I mean, I can, I still do, but I just don't want to be that's the only thing I keep saying about them. But also, I don't know what else to say about them.
I mean, I've said just bring an F2 car next time, it might be a bit more
I
competitive.
mean, it might genuinely be quicker. But it
Also,
just, again, this is the whole thing of like, I'm just so not excited by Audi right now because I'm like,
yeah,
Jesus Christ, even
looking
if
at.
you pour billions into this,
Well,
then
this is the
you
thing.
need to at this point.
This is my crazy strategy. If they come dead last this year, they'll get more aero time to spend developing the
This is
next car.
assuming that they then understand any of it and they can do anything. The amount of upgrades they brought to that car this year and none of it's done anything.
Yeah, but they're just pretending that they're sacrificing the entire season
This is
to
almost a
make
whole level
sure
of
they
delusion you
get.
didn't have when Ferrari was doing the best of Ferrari.
Oh, I appreciate this is fully Delulu, but like the long game strategic ploy by Audi of going, look, could you just sacrifice like a year so you're
Is
back in
this them
front
trying to take
all
the
the aero
piss or out
time?
of Alpine and go, we've got our own 100 race plan, don't you know? We're going to restart it many more times than you.
Well, no, our 100 race plan is 14 races, or 24 races of absolute shite, and then the remaining, what, 76 of pure gold because we sandbagged so hard. And then, as soon as we sort of had all that development time, we maybe sandbagged for another 24 for next season. So, 2026, they came in with a car that had all the development time, all the wind tunnel time, all the CFD time, and they can go, look at that, look at what we've done, and
If
look.
those of you listening would like to join our Patreon for £1, I think it costs, you will be able to find out what exactly Jesse's been taking to have these grand delusions, because this is not normal behavior, even for him.
Pay for me to see a psychotherapist. We'll move on to Haas then, if that's the case. Timo,
Spa
Haas.
was never going to be their track, so I'm not too surprised here. They'll be back. I'm not worried. It's not, I'm not worried about them. Isn't that just nice?
It's nice not be worried about Haas. I sort of thought it would be their circuit. I sort of thought they were going to do their usual thing of strip off most of the wing, go really quick in a straight line. But clearly, their car is a little more nuanced this year. But at the same time, I think it's nuanced in a bit of a sort of Williams sort of way of it's not got a good floor. They're not able to activate it enough to back off the wings, so they lacked a bit of the speed to get up there. It was also a pants strategy too, way too conservative to make anything of their car. And yeah, ultimately, I think they sort of hampered themselves in more than one instance of this.
Yeah, not too much to add on for that for me, but I'm not worried about them, so it's nice.
Yeah.
Alpine, though, unexpected point for the team for me, but
Points.
it was only a point now, yes. But was well earned, and at the lastest moment too, which if you're getting points, I suppose that's the most annoying time to get them from your opponent's perspective, so you do double damage there. But it was always amusing seeing Ocon overtaking, I think, Magnussen. Because you're actually overtaking a team that you'll be racing for next year, which is always just a bit, oh, yeah, it's fine, that's fine, don't worry about that, fine.
Yeah, it must have been an interesting one, but equally at the same time, you know, this weekend is possibly a bit of a fluke for Alpine, so it's sort of not too grating, sort of going past your team
It's
next year,
kind of
going,
like, are you happy with
ha-ha,
yourself? I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm here either. And
yeah,
also,
it's a strange one. I wasn't really expecting that, and clearly Ocon, with the weight off his shoulders, is a happier driver. Great pace, and the livery wasn't terrible. I think that Ocon's driving was really quite revolutionary. Look at the way that he was able to somehow get the car hooked up, and the way that he was making those overtakes was quite inspired, especially down through sort of La Source, down through Eau Rouge, up Radial, and onto the Kemmel Straight. The way that he was sort of harvesting power, deploying it tactically. There was a great overtake he made on one of the Haases, puts it to the inside of La Source, which is not where you want to be for that corner. So knows he's compromised his exit, but knows he's harvested electricity going into it. So he's then able to sort of round the corner he upshifts really early. He short shifts the car, so he avoids the wheel spin and then uses the electrical power to really push himself down the hill. It's really technical driving that we're still seeing from him, and it excites me. If we get a good car for him, we might see something a bit more than what we've seen for the past few years. It was just that little reminder of the spark of why I quite like Esteban. It just sort of rekindled my love more so.
Nah. I mean, it's good for you to have dreams, Jesse.
I'm not welling up about this. We're not going there. I was just getting a bit...
No, you are. You are. It's okay. It's you've lost Giovinazzi. He's not in F1 anymore. You need another tall boy.
I've got to have my special weird little guys. Speaking of electing special weird little guys, it's time for our winners and spinners. And we'll start, as usual, with our winners. Timo, yours, please.
Got to be Oscar Piastri. Started P6, finished P3 ahead of his teammate. 1.1 seconds, less than that now, actually, away from the win. Fucking tremendous.
Yeah, what is the gap to the win?
Probably like 0.2 of a second now. He was close at the end.
They came across the line. Very, very close. So close. Let's see. No.
And so it was the closest 1-2-3 up to that point since 2016. So I don't know what this closest 1-2 will have been for quite a while. Maybe since Imola, musically, actually. That was pretty close.
0.647 of a second.
Not bad.
Pretty close.
Within a second. Than Imola. So this year with Norris and Verstappen. And you've got every piece of arc has its cheap copy, and Imola's now the cheap copy to Hamilton and Piastri.
I mean, yeah, it was closer. Imola was 0.725. If you look back at the results from Spa, Piastri 0.647 behind Hamilton, then you look at the gap from Leclerc, Verstappen, Norris was the next really close battle. Everyone there within 1.3 seconds. Again, it was like you sort of had this first three come choo-choo-choo and a little gap and then choo-choo-choo. It was like, this was a good race. If you purely base it on the...
Hold on. Yeah. You make it.
A really good race, purely if you base it on the choo-choo-choo noises you got as they cross the line.
Fun fact, just because of a completely different thing you've just reminded me of, but it's not related, but it is motorsport. I don't know if... I think she's put it on social media. At the Formula E, Bella went around and got anyone and anyone she could find to, including drivers and various celebrities, to make Formula E car noises.
Oh yeah, I have seen this one. Pretty good one from her. Is that what you've got to say on your winner? So
that was all. That was just what you reminded me of. Go for it with your winner.
My winner, George Russell. I mean, how do you make a one-stop workaround a newly resurfaced high degradation Spa in the heat? Technically, you don't. On track, you do. Legislatively, you don't.
I've got to laugh because it's sad otherwise.
Yeah, golden tier stuff, and then defend from Lewis Hamilton on those tyres and hold on to the win. Absolutely magic. Ultimately, for me, his winner position sticks. The DSQ wasn't caused by him solely, and his driving and pace still stand out for me. I think I can still award that based on his on-track performance.
I'm trying to think when it's been, with the obvious exception aside, when have we been most... eaved off by a race win being taken from someone in recent times, if we have something like that. There's the obvious example, but we don't talk about that. So
I don't know. It's such a strange one because it does happen so rarely, but then they also sort of get confined to obscurity so much so that even I can't recall them. We haven't mentioned.
We're going to spin this maybe then. Yeah, be easier. And
crucially, though, it is a good lead into your spinner. However.
Yeah, Formula One and the FIA. I was waiting to see what the outcome of that was before I put down a spinner. I had the Google Doc open going, I've got other people, but you've decided to jump the queue because it's 1.15 kilograms and you just needed to let them do an outlap and not steal more fuel. Yeah. Right? Come on.
A kilo is it's just worth like half a second a lap. But at the same time, they took like way more fuel than needed to certain extents. I don't know.
It just goes back to me wanting to open that conversation up with anyone at the FIA or F1 who will listen to me, which means probably none of them, about why can you not just penalise the team and not the driver? Because, yeah, it's all this win as a team, lose the team thing. But why should the driver have to suffer for the team's cock-up, essentially, if that's the line that we're going for with this? So it's frustrating and... I hope it's the last time this year that I get annoyed at F1 and the FIA for something stupid, but I shouldn't have said that. They always find a way.
Yeah. I mean, for me, when it comes to the FIA,
a bit too much.
But for me, when it comes to the FIA and F2, the thing that really bugs me at the moment is Bruno Michel, the head of F2, of course, worked for, still has ties to Mechachrome Supertech, the providers of the engines for F2. And you sort of keep looking at their retirements and their issues they're having, you sort of go, feels like a big amount of insider trading here, if that's what you're getting away with, FIA and sort of motorsports commissioning groups. But anyway, that's by the by. My spinner this weekend, Haas, purely off of personal expectations, should have done better, could have done better, didn't go bold enough on their strategy, and don't really understand their floor enough to make it work. So disappointed.
I'm not worried about him.
I'm not either, but I'm not cross.
You're not mad, you're just disappointed.
Yeah, that's the phrase. Yeah, I couldn't think of it for a second.
So I feel about you a lot of the time.
Yeah, true. Predictions and pole position. No one got that correct. I think we all went for Norris, so we were wrong there.
I like that none of us got points for that one.
I, however, did somehow, by hook or by crook, get 2 points for my podium.
Crook
mostly. P1 and P2, correct. I completely lucked into that one. Everyone else a point for P2 by proxy as well, because I went Hamilton for a win, obviously Piastri second. 0 points were awarded for the fastest lap, which actually went to Perez in the end. None of the drivers we picked were Perez, and no one got points for their wild prediction either. Which then brings us into our fantasy review for Spa. Noah Honga 3, highest score of 205 points. ARG 201. And F1 Team Serto 197. Three new teams joining the sort of top ranking this weekend. Team Nitro RX P6, Jesse's Podcast Team P10, The Greatest Moustache P23, and Extra Magnifico Terrestrii P37. Joe and Russell in the team, not helping matters there at all.
I was thinking that was like, you know, it's bad when the Greatest Moustache is 15 places ahead of you for a Grand Prix. I was like, what has happened here? Oh, that's what happened. The only two drivers to not finish were in your team.
A driver to finish first, but then also scrapped from the list.
Okay, again, that ruins that whole thing. It's like to finish first, you have to finish. He did finish, and in first.
Yeah.
And yet somehow, that's not margin. Enough.
Yeah. Overall, Take a Stroll, 2,934 points, leads the championship at the moment in second place. What's the Racing Point, 2,881 points. And then new in at P3, actually. Noah Honga, 3, 2,843 points. Clearly had a good enough weekend to overhaul Dorsberg and Steiner, I think, was the fallen P3 sitter. JB Racing sits in P12, on the curves P13. Ellie May's podcast.
Which team. I should point out, by the way, in coming for your P12, I am like 4 points away from you.
Oh, that's fighting talk.
I was about 200 a couple of races ago, and I've somehow managed to bridge that gap. I have no idea how.
Is that the highest I am at the moment?
That's the highest that team is, yeah, overall.
Jesus. Is that the highest of my teams?
Yeah, because actually that's how I choose which ones to... I go for the highest ones for each of us. So.
Jesus. Yeah, you are 5 points behind me. That's terrifying.
Leading into the summer break.
Worst part is that you've not closed up to me. I've fallen back to you.
I mean,
I've been overtaken by successive teams, and as a result, I've fallen back to P12.
And there's another one coming. At least.
Yeah. Anyway, where were we? Yes. JB Racing P12, Anyways Podcast Team P19, and The Greatest Moustache P37 at the bottom still. That's all we've got time for on this week's episode. And that's all we've got time for the first half of the 2024 season. We've made it to the summer break. My voice is just about giving out, as you can tell. But we're there. We've made it.
Finally breaking.
Yeah.
But we will be back because we'll have some F2 to talk about at some point and not too distant. We've got 3 or 4 rounds to talk about. It's hard. There's so much F2 that's happened lately. I forget. We've got probably Austria, Spain, Silverstone, and Budapest to talk about. And Spa, then, actually. Okay, yeah, we've got a fair bit to talk about. So do keep your eyes on
it. Yeah, we've got
that one.
Did we do it after Spain last time or before Spain?
I think we did it after Spain. I'm trying to think.
After Spain.
We just had Spain.
We'll check the
but notes. Yeah, so we'll have that. And maybe we'll have some other F1 content during the summer break. We'll just have to see. But I think...
Oh, it includes Spain.
Interesting. One conclusion we can make for now is that given where we thought this season was going to be going at the very start, and after we reviewed Bahrain, it's been very pleasantly surprising that whilst we're still not by any means perfect on this, it's been a lot better than anyone was hoping for, dead hope. We've had what, 7 different winners, 2 wins for Hamilton. Perez hasn't won. Verstappen probably still winning the title, but is being threatened. You've got to love it.
You know what I've just done? I've just opened up our notes from the Bahrain review. And do you know what your note was for Red Bull?
Oh, dear.
Congratulations on the 2024 driver and constructors titles.
I still can stand by that. It's theirs to lose.
It's still open to happen.
It's less of a guarantee, I admit. Yeah. But also, can you blame me for saying that I could Bahrain?
Yeah, true. I mean, I was pretty on the ball when I said Alpine, long and rough season for them.
In other news, water, wet.
Yeah, water, wet, sky, blue. Anyway, back to concluding this week's episode. Timo, in the meantime, where can the people find you?
You can find me over on the Curbs, the Nitro RX podcast. Is It Fast, where I'll have some Formula E stuff from the season finale in London. Paddock's Rarity, there's new stuff there occasionally. And catch up on all the IndyCar action, because we've got about a month off there because of the Olympics. So across the Bond Motorsport Network IndyCar Edition podcast, we will find a shorter name for that at some point.
What's that acronymized?
It's awkward.
Does it spell
it's just awkward. It doesn't awkward? Really do anything. It's just a bunch of words. Word. Not really. But yeah, I'm everywhere. And Instagram, t.overs.daily.onthecurbs. There we go.
Lovely. In the meantime, if you want more from me, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. All the usual stuff out each week. I think if you pick up the latest one, there is the latest update on the Suzuki Jimny and some other interesting bits besides. And of course, I'm on social media as @JesseOnCars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. More pictures coming up to Instagram of Festival of Speed, because that was the last thing I shot. And then, of course, on TikTok, I might have a new video coming out soon. I don't know. I've got the bits to make it. I just need to bother making it. We've still got a video to do from when we went rallying as well that I need to put together. Plenty of us still to come through the summer break.
Put it in black and white and stick some old timey music over it. There you go.
Done. Anyway, yes, there we go. That's us for the first half of the season. Join us again in, August?
Yes.
Yeah, tail end of August for the Dutch Grand Prix, Zandvoort. Exciting times. Thank you.